Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:22 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is May 31st. It's the last day of the month, so perhaps a little bit of profit-taking. There's at least some evidence of a tiny bit of softness on global stock markets. If we simply scroll over to the World Equity Index page, then nothing really dynamic, except for Mexico and Brazil, where we have had a direct response to this very sharp pullback that we've had in oil prices today. And part of the reason for that is because there is still plenty of supply. Now, there is a great deal of discussion going on about whether we are in an era of, or approaching an era of peak demand, or whether there is any real weight to that. There's a question about how quickly electric vehicles are going to reach mass penetration of the market, or indeed when are we going to have autonomous vehicles, and what impact would that have on personal ownership. And then there is discussion about what's going to be the most prolific business model, and whether we're going to have these big fleets of cars or not. These are very large questions, but as we relate to the oil market, the most important thing that's happened in the last decade has been that there was a massive amount of money invested in additional new supply. And some of it was quite expensive to introduce, but then when you invest a great deal in exploration, what you're going to find is some of it is comparatively cheap to exploit, and some of it is comparatively expensive. And when you have prices around $50, you're going to exploit it, the ones that are easiest to get at. And that is applicable to just about anywhere. And what we see today, and I think this is a really useful graphic, where you have the average offshore break-even oil prices for some of the major producers, like the pre-salt in Brazil, which would have been considered to be one of the most expensive areas to drill because it is so very deep, but it's less than $40. And then when we look at deep water projects by Shell, they're less than 40. But when you look at the Norwegian offshore shelf, then what we have is that they are at I think it is somewhere, I don't know why that thing is right in the middle of the page, but it is around $30 a barrel. So when we look at the oil price, we really should look at it on a weekly basis. And what we are presented with is this rather volatile, rangy environment. We've had the bounce back from sub-$30 levels, and we have seen now that there is resistance demonstrated around $60 a barrel. And despite the fact that OPEC has cut back and they are producing almost 2 million barrels a day less, they have not succeeded in getting prices above $60 a barrel, because there is so much of this additional supply that some of the majors, they have cancelled exploration. But after spending a decade of massive capital expenditure, they already know where the oil is, so exploration is no longer required, and they have been able to cut their production and employ additional pieces of technology. They have been able to cut their production costs, so that now the marginal cost of production is around $50 a barrel, and that's exactly where we are right now. So prices are likely to vacillate around that level. It still represents a considerable inflation in terms of the marginal cost of production relative to where it was prior to the bull market in commodities, but it is still substantially below where it was just a few years ago. And that is perhaps the most important factor. Whether we are indeed approaching a peak demand era, I think, is rather beside the point. I think that if we look at the Jevons paradox, there is a long history of these types of very ambitious targets. It was only a decade ago that people were talking about peak supply. Now they're talking about peak demand. What the Jevons paradox tells us is that, and it is economics 101, when prices are low, supply increases, excuse me, demand increases, and it puts pressure on producers to become more efficient, but it takes pressure off of consumers to be more efficient, and they find more uses for it. And I think that that is probably where we're going to be, that if we do move into a period of time where the transportation market doesn't represent the biggest source of demand, well then refiners will retool and they'll start producing different products, and we will have an explosion in the development of those additional products, whether it is going to be in plastics or fertilizers. So that is certainly something to keep in mind, that it isn't as if the oil market is about to disappear, but neither can we expect that it is going to get back up above $100 anytime soon in the absence of a very clear geopolitical reason to get there. Well, that's probably enough about the oil market. If we look at stock markets, Mario Draghi today said that he was really quite comfortable with quantitative easing. He didn't see any reason at all to err from his policy. Now, if we look at the ECB's balance sheet, it has been accelerating higher, and that is perhaps the most important factor. David has often said, I think we could describe it as a Fullerism, that monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time. And that is certainly the case with Europe. At 4.195 trillion euro, the ECB's balance sheet is now larger than the Federal Reserve's. And it is on an upward trajectory, and the pace of that upward trajectory has picked up. And Mario Draghi is saying that he's quite happy with the pace. So that represents quite a significant tailwind for European equities. The S&P 500 has not been rallying as fast as some of those European indices. It has been largely range-bound for the last 3 weeks. It broke upwards to new highs earlier, or excuse me, that was last Friday, and it's a little bit softer in here today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. But if we look at, for example, the Euro Stoxx index, then it has been rallying for much of the last 3 months, and while it has been relatively calm over the last 3 weeks, and there is no sign yet that that has there is really no pressure on the progression of higher reaction lows. It just looks like a consolidation, and it is back at a region of previous resistance. So, in the absence of clear downward dynamics, we can anticipate that it is going to do exactly what it has been doing, which has been to range for a short period of time and then break out. And so far, that's been what it's been doing. The FTSE 100 has been among the strongest stock markets, and it was down somewhat in here today, wasn't able to hold its high. And we are right at the end of the month, so we are getting at least some profit taking. But I think the most important point is that the FTSE 100 has broken up and out of what has been a 17-year range, and it bounced from the region of the trend mean 5 weeks ago. It is a little bit overbought in the short term, so there's ample potential for some consolidation, but the most important point is that it has completed this very, very long-term range. And we looked at South Korea yesterday, and we looked at the UK, and the FTSE 100 is an international index. It is packed full of globally significant companies. So the fact that it is breaking upwards, that is really quite positive from the perspective of global growth. There is a great deal of speculation going on right now about what's going to happen with China, what is going to happen with North Korea, what's going to happen with the reshuffle of the Standing Committee in the Communist Party later this year. These are all significant questions, but perhaps the most The biggest conclusion we can draw is that the last thing the Communist Party wants right now is volatility. So that is part of the reason that we had this really quite significant rally in the Chinese banks over the last few weeks. That because they represent a significant weighting within the A-share index, that they have been utilized as a tool for manipulating it higher. And there has been a distinct lack of volatility for nearly 2 years following what was a very hot period in early 2015. And I think that that's what we can anticipate, that when we get signs of weakness, that at least until October we're going to get at least some evidence of support coming in. And that is also part of the reason why the H-share index in Hong Kong, which is the Chinese Hong Kong listed Chinese companies, continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean and has held this staircase sequence of one range above another. The Nifty index in India was a little bit softer in here today, but it remains a tower of strength in when we look at it on a global basis. Part of the reason that it has done so well is because the rupee has been among the firmest currencies in the world this year. Now, the most important thing that it has done is broken that the dollar's progression of higher reaction lows. It has now paused. I think it has gone up enough for the Indians to worry about it becoming too strong, but it has not yet broken back above the 200-day moving average, and I think that is rather unlikely at this stage. There are still a significant number of people that, especially institutional investors, are worried about the pace of reform, and they are worried that that things are not happening fast enough, but and that most of the growth has been in the services sector, and that there hasn't been enough of infrastructure development. But India, as a democracy, and one where there are a significant number of agrarian type people that do vote, then the pace couldn't possibly be as quick in terms of infrastructure development as we have in places like China. But it is going to happen eventually, and I think the most important thing to watch is the banking sector. Again, institutional investors are worried about non-performing loans. The RBI has been taking steps to attempt to tackle that problem, but as long as the banking sector continues to represent a lead indicator, and as long as it is continuing to push on to new highs, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the Indian stock market. And we looked at the long bond yesterday, and it is still pressuring the region of the MA, but it is now trading above it today. And this is rather important. It is a sort of a do or die moment at 155. And if it can sustain a move above 155, well, then that will confirm a breakout from what has been a 6 month base. So then the potential for it to rally further, really, we would have to give it the benefit of the doubt. And the Nasdaq was a little bit weaker in here today, and Google was among the leading decliners. Or I guess we should be calling it Alphabet now. So it did get up to $990.60, and that is a small key reversal. And what and I think people who have been to the chart seminar will remember that the key to the key is size. It is not a big one, so it doesn't have that dramatic effect, and therefore it would need significant downside follow-through tomorrow to confirm a signal. In the meantime, it is right in the region of what is a very large psychological level. So some pause and consolidation in this level would not be beyond the bounds of possibility at all. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.